Shrink Wrap Radio number 35, April 30th, 2006. Attitudinal Healing with Dr. Jerry Jampolsky. Welcome to Shrink Wrap Radio, the planet's premier psychology podcast. This is your host, Dr. Dave, coming to you from the San Francisco Bay Area. Shrink Wrap Radio is the show that speaks from the psychologist in me to the psychologist in you, whether you be amateur, student, or professional.
It looks like someone is really bugging you, or they're attacking you, or being dishonest with you. And the tendency of our ego is want to attack back or put a fence around us and not be with that person. What we're talking about is, rather than perceiving that person as attacking you, to believe there are only two emotions. Either the person's loving, and it doesn't seem like that person is loving at that moment, or they're fearful, giving you a call of help for love. And when we really feel that a person is giving us a call of help, our heart automatically opens up, and the energy between you and that person shifts. And all of a sudden, there's a continuity in terms of feeling oneness. Because that's all attitude healing is about, is letting go of the blocks that interfere with our experiencing ourselves as love and giving that love away.
That was the voice of the internationally known psychiatrist and author, Dr. Gerald Jampolsky. His 1979 book, Love is Letting Go of Fear, sold millions of copies worldwide. Since that time, he has gone on to write a number of other books, all of which bear the hallmark of stating profound psychological and spiritual insights in simple terms that anyone can grasp. Perhaps Dr. Jampolsky's biggest contribution, however, is his founding of the Center for Attitudinal Healing, which now is known as the International Center for Attitudinal Healing, having spawned 300 such centers around the world. I'd like to give you more background on this by reading directly from the center's website. I quote, "In 1975, there was virtually no emotional support system for people affected by catastrophic illnesses. Most people in the U.S. were no longer living in extended family situations and rarely died at home as they had a generation before. Instead, illness and dying was largely relegated to hospital rooms, where the medical problem was the only focus. In this setting, the emotional experience was often one of fear and painful isolation, with few opportunities for people to open to a deeper experience. While making the rounds on a pediatric oncology ward, Dr. Jerry Jampolsky overheard an 8-year-old boy ask his doctor, 'What is it like to die?' The doctor ignored the question and changed the subject. Jerry wrote, and I quote, 'I think the physician was fearful of addressing the question. When I investigated this further, I discovered that changing the subject was not an uncommon response to these questions. I discovered that children usually look for someone they can trust who will give them an honest replies to these questions. On this particular ward, this turned out to be the cleaning woman. The kids seemed to know they would get honest, direct answers from her. I began to wonder generally where kids could go to talk about such serious things as death, and found there was no safe place where they could talk. Jerry founded the center to create a safe place where kids with cancer could talk. With the help of several volunteers, Jerry started the first support group at the center. Even though Jerry is a psychiatrist, in group everyone was regarded as equal, kids, volunteers, and Jerry. The cleaning woman demonstrated to Jerry that an approach to emotional and spiritual support didn't necessarily require an expert. This woman showed that the presence of such simple qualities as honesty and kindness were powerfully therapeutic. Today, the center offers support not only to children, but people of all ages. Nearly 300 people are served every week. All our services are still provided by regular volunteers, not experts, just as it was in that first group with children. The primary requirement for volunteering at the center is a willingness to be unconditionally loving, to listen non-judgmentally, and to be genuine. Certainly, professionals do volunteer at the center, but they leave their titles at the door. 12 principles define the core of attitudinal healing, These principles introduce the dynamic of choice into a psychological process. Each principle offers an opportunity to step through the fear, conflict, or separation we may be feeling, and often recycling, and to make a choice to experience peace of mind instead, even in extreme situations. Attitudinal healing defines health as inner peace and healing as letting go of fear. It regards love as the most powerful healing force there is. End quote. And now, let's get into the interview. Okay, my guest today is Dr. Gerald Jampolsky. Welcome to Shrink Wrap Radio.
Glad to be aboard.
Good. Aboard is the right term, actually. We're sitting here in Jerry's houseboat in Sausalito, so a nautical phrase really makes sense. Now, sort of backing up, your training is that of a psychiatrist, and I'm under the impression that most psychiatrists are oriented towards medications and so on, but I have the impression that your career has been less oriented towards pharmaceutical approaches and more towards psychological and spiritual approaches. How did that, am I right? And if so, how did that happen?
Well, you're right. I went to Stanford Medical School and had a residency there in adult psychiatry, and then went to Langley Porter at UCD and had my residency in child psychiatry there. And so I was very oriented to both aspects of drugs and psychotherapeutic ways of approaching. But my heart always felt that it's not that drugs aren't helpful, but that oftentimes there are better ways that one can deal with problems other than drugs. And I was interested in exploring, pushing the envelope and finding other ways, thinking that there had to be another way of practicing psychiatry than the one I was taught.
Yes, yes. And I remember when you and I first had contact many years ago, I had been doing some stuff in hypnosis, and I guess you had too.
I've had some expertise for a number of years in hypnosis and in biofeedback. Got interested in parapsychology, and I was really a seeker in many, many ways.
I think we got interested in a lot of the same things, actually, and kind of knew some of the same people. Now, the thing that I know you best for is that some years back, you founded something called the Center for Attitudinal Healing. And that's still going, right?
Well, I'll correct the name. It's called the International Center for Attitudinal Healing.
Uh-huh.
It was originally in Tiburon, and for a number of years now, it's been in Sausalito, California. It's known as the Mother Center. And there are now about 130 centers around the world.
Oh, my goodness.
All offering free services. We started working with children who had catastrophic illness, cancer, severe accidents, and had a psychological, spiritual approach. And my guidance was, at that time in my life, I was an atheist. I was going through a difficult divorce. I turned to alcohol. Mm-hmm. And my whole life was kind of going downhill. And I came across some writings called A Course in Miracles, a way of looking at your life spiritually, which really emphasized inner peace is your only goal and forgiveness as your main function.
Right.
And I started the center out with a sense of guidance, listening to an inner voice that said that these young kids are going to be my teachers and other people's teachers about another way of looking at life. Mm-hmm. Another way of looking at death, and in a sense they'd be wise spirits in young bodies teaching us a lot of important lessons. And that's how the center started, in a very small way. I had no dream that it would expand, and then later on we began to work with the siblings, brothers and sisters, aunts and uncles and grandparents. AIDS came on the situation around 1981. We began closely working with San Francisco Hospital. And we started a number of support groups for people with AIDS, children who had AIDS, children whose parents had AIDS, and we began working in that level. We began doing workshops and having groups for people with cancer. Then some of the people wanted to have the sex difference, so we just saw the women with AIDS and men with AIDS, and some people liked the combination. We did a lot of experimentation in that. As time went on, we started another group called person-to-person group. These are people who have no illness, but they want to learn how to incorporate attitudinal healing into their own life.
Okay, now let me interrupt you there. The term attitudinal healing, I think, is an interesting one and maybe deserves a little bit of explanation, because usually when we hear the word healing, we think of physical healing. Mm-hmm. If we talk about healing somebody from cancer, we might think of total remission, but I'm not sure that that's what you're talking about.
We define health as inner peace.
Okay.
And healing is letting go of fear. And attitudinal healing is based on the premise that it's not our bodies or people outside of ourselves or situations that cause us so much distress, but it's our thoughts and attitudes about those things.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And the one gift that the universe has given us is the ability to change the thoughts we put in our mind,
mm-hmm.
to change the attitudes we put in our
right.
mind. And more and more, I'm convinced that your attitude is everything. It's the
yeah.
anchor
yeah.
and the rudder of your ship.
Mm-hmm.
And until we recognize that, so we begin to do inner healings rather than trying to change other people's attitudes. We decide we're going to change our own attitudes.
Mm-hmm.
And forgiveness is one of the biggest vehicles around letting go of the hurtful past.
Yes.
And staying in the present and listening to a little inner voice kind of guide you to tell you what to think, say, and do, but coming from love rather than anger or from hate or from grievances.
Yeah. You know, I'm struck by the convergence of the spiritual approach, which says that your thoughts and your attitudes are key or fundamental to your well-being, to your inner health, and also have a big impact on your outer health, and developments in cognitive psychology that have kind of come to the same conclusion. They're cloaked in a different guise and a different language, but they talk a lot about your beliefs and assumptions and challenging those. Isn't that interesting?
Yeah, I think that the more we wake up to the fact that our thoughts do create our reality, then we begin to take responsibility for our own happiness rather than blaming
mm-hmm.
someone else.
Mm-hmm.
And my wife, Dr. Diane Cerencione, and I have written a number of books around attitudinal healing, like Love is Letting Go of Fear.
I read that one.
Teach Only
yeah.
Love, Goodbye to Guilt, Out of Darkness into the Light, Change Your Mind, Change Your Life, Me First and the Gimme Gimmies.
Wait, what's your most recent title?
Forgiveness, the Greatest Healer of All.
Okay, I'll put a link to that one for sure in our show notes. I read Love is Letting Go of Fear, the first one, and it had a big impact on me and everybody that I... It was widely read. Everybody that I knew was reading
it. It's sold over 5 million books now, and I guess all of our books put together, maybe it's about 6.5 million. They say each book usually gets to about 3 people, so we're talking, you know, maybe about 20 million people.
Wow, wow.
In about 30 different languages. And I have been invited to about 50 different countries to do workshops, and this coming workshop in July that some of your listeners might be interested in, July 14th to 18th, is going to be in San Rafael.
San Rafael, California.
California. Mm-hmm. They're coming. China, mainland China, wants to start a center all over the place. And if people are interested in this, they can go to the website of the center, which is www.attitudinalhealing.org. And they can find out other information about Diane and I by going to www.loveisforeveryone.
Okay. You know, I went to one of those websites, and I found a list of 12 principles of attitudinal healing. And I'd like to read through them, and I don't know if it makes sense to have you comment on each one or maybe make a comment at the end. What do you think?
I think at the end.
Okay. Let me just read through them quickly then, because they're really worth reading, because they do encapsulate what you've been talking about here. So these are the principles of attitudinal healing. 1, the essence of our being is love. 2, health is inner peace. Healing is letting go of fear. 3, giving and receiving are the same. 4, we can let go of the past and the future. 5, now is the only time there is, and each instant is forgiving. 6, we can learn to love ourselves and others by forgiving rather than judging. There's been a lot of research on that recently, showing the importance.
It's become a very important subject. All the stuff we were theorizing back in 1975 now has been validated by scientific documentation. That when we hold on to angry thoughts, when we hold on to grieving thoughts, It interferes with our immune system.
That's right.
And plays a big part in many of our illnesses and why people go to doctors.
That's right. The preceding interview, the one just before this one, was with Dr. Gail Ironson and Dr. Dale Ironson, who were reporting at a major conference at UC Berkeley. They've been studying AIDS patients, and they found that they studied a lot of attitudes and beliefs, and they found that AIDS patients who believe that God loves them do much better, and their physiological markers are better than those who think that God is a punishing God and out to get them. And that was just one of a number of attitudes and beliefs.
Maybe just stop there for a moment and, mm-hmm. and see if you're really feeling that there's a God that's out to get you. You're going to live in a fearful state.
Yeah.
And that fear plays a part in the chemistry of our body.
Sure.
And that really has a lot to do with it. So there's been a lot of new research now in terms of llamas and other kinds of things to say, mm-hmm. you know, when you have a quiet mind, there's an old Indian statement that a busy mind is a sick mind, a slow mind is a healthy mind, and a still mind is a divine mind. So if you really want to be healthy, I think we have to learn to not make our to-do list so important, but yeah. to make our only goal, what we do in attitudinal healing is make our only goal is to have inner peace. Mm-hmm. And then if we're holding on to a grievance or angry at the moment, then is this really bringing me peace of mind? And the answer is usually no.
Yeah.
Do you want to be happy or do you want to be right? Important yeah. question that we need to learn to ask and realize that that really can change our life. And when, no matter what's being put on our plate, we can learn that we can really be happy and be peaceful. Our peace does not depend on what's going on in the external world.
Mm-hmm.
And we can have peace even when we're in the midst of chaos, which most of us are living in a world at this point,
right.
wondering what terrorists is going to happen, and what's happening in our government, and all the other kinds of things.
Yeah.
One can still remain peace and be an activist, but still without anger and without attack.
I totally agree, and what a great reminder. I want to finish the list here. So we're on number 7, I think, which says we can become love finders rather than fault finders. That's an interesting turnaround on the idea of fault finding is to do some love finding. Number 8, we can choose and direct ourselves to be peaceful inside regardless of what is happening outside, which is what you were just saying about terrorism and so on. 9, we are students and teachers to each other. 10, we can focus on the whole of life rather than the fragments. 11, since love is eternal, death need not be viewed as fearful. And 12, we can always perceive ourselves and others as either extending love or giving a call for help.
Let's take that last one for a minute.
Okay.
Because it looks like someone is really bugging you or they're attacking you or being dishonest with you. And the tendency of our ego is want to attack back or put a fence around us and not to be with that person. What we're talking about is rather than perceiving that person as attacking you, to believe there are only two emotions. Either the person's loving, and it doesn't seem like that person is loving at that moment, or they're fearful, giving you a call of help for love. And when we really feel that a person is giving us a call of help, our heart automatically opens up,
mm-hmm.
and the energy between you and that person shifts, and all of a sudden, there's a continuity in terms of feeling oneness. Because that's all attitudinal healing is about, is letting go of the blocks that interfere with our experiencing ourselves as love and giving that love away in our experiencing oneness. I often tell people, David, that if I had the opportunity to rewrite the nomenclature book for psychologists and psychiatrists,
yeah.
the thick book, all mm-hmm. the diagnosis, it would be one page and one sentence.
Hmm.
And it would say, you're crazy, you're insane, when you're not experiencing yourself as love and giving that love away. And if you really follow that definition, most of us are crazy most of the time.
Yeah,
and some of us just wear bitter costumes than others,
mm-hmm.
so it looks like we're okay, but the other person's kind of crazy.
Yeah,
not so.
Yeah, you know, one thing that got triggered for me in what you just said is something I've noticed in myself is I may have judgments against a person when I first meet them. I may have stereotypes and so on, but once I've heard their story, everybody has a story, and once we get beneath the surface and I've heard their story, I find all of that goes away. And what comes instead is a lot of understanding and acceptance.
And we need to let go. See, I think we're born with compassion.
Mm-hmm.
You're born with PhDs in love.
Yeah, I think you're right.
And what happens is our we create an ego that tends to come from fear, where we tend to attack other people and find that guilt gives us something that we want. And we get all these things that interfere with our experiencing love. But as we let go of seeing any value in guilt, we let go of seeing value in holding on to grievances, those blocks, when they let go, the natural flow of our energy is love. And that's why when we give love, we receive at the same time. It's not a matter of getting. It's a matter of giving and living in a consciousness of giving and forgiving.
Yes. Now, has there been any linkage between the attitudinal healing and physical healing in the, you know, the many people that have come through this process?
Well, that's not been our purpose. Our purpose has been to find inner peace.
Okay.
And that's how we define health.
Yeah.
But there are many people who have had experiences where they were terminally ill, and indeed they're no longer terminally ill and living many, many years afterwards. Mm-hmm. We've had someone who was legally blind and began to see again.
My goodness.
But the emphasis has been, when people come to us, is not to heal the body as it is to heal the spirit.
Right, because if the spirit is healed, then one can face death, I guess, with equanimity or whatever.
You know, not infirmities. One can really do that if one really feels that. That goes back to our first principle about true being that you mentioned, that the essence of our being is love. That means that we're really light beings. And a little lesson that I wrote the other day that Diane R. Duane says this: your light is the only thing that I see, and it's but a reflection of the light in me. Mm-hmm. And if we can begin to do that kind of imagery with people, even politicians that we may not agree with, we don't have to agree with someone not to attack them, and to recognize that everyone's really a Siamese twin to us, spiritually a Siamese twin. And if you're really hurting someone else or attacking, you're really attacking yourself. Because in essence, we're only one child. We're all one. We're all really one.
Yeah.
And one attitude of the healing is helping us to heal the illusion that we're separate from ourselves.
Right.
And healing that fight that many of us have inside, where we're fighting ourselves or condemning ourselves. We don't feel worthy of love, or we feel like we're a victim. And we don't realize we can choose not to be a victim. And we can choose to know that we are responsible for our own happiness, and that love is who we are. That's what we are.
Yeah.
We don't have to prove it.
Yeah. Now, there was a turnaround for you. I mean, this really worked in your life. I think you started off mentioning that you went through a period of alcoholism. And,
yes.
And somehow this taking on these principles.
Well, I disciplined myself. I really worked hard, still work hard. I'm still in process. I'm always there. But I think it's about retraining your mind. It's about retraining the thoughts in your mind so that you don't block your heart from its natural way of dealing with things. And I think we get up at 4:30 every morning because we want to take that time to communicate with our spiritual life. We light a candle over there, you see on top of the fireplace, and we spend time there, and we take a walk, and it's a meditation walk, and we believe there is a higher power. We try to do our best to listen to what I call the voice of love, tell me what to think, say, and do, rather than the ego voice that gets me in trouble all the time.
Yeah, so that's great that you have a partner in your life who you're both on the same we're path.
Very, very fortunate, no question about it. Very blessed.
You've written all of these books. Where do you get the ideas for the books? How, where are they coming from?
Well, we were riding in the car the other day, and I saw smoke from an airplane. And it was like one of these white smoke screens. And it was just trying to turn into a cloud. And I said, Diane, look, she was driving. I said, look at that cloud. It's a cloud that's trying to be a rainbow. And all of a sudden, she got really excited and saying, hey, that's a wonderful name for a book. Because, you know, the cloud wants to be the rainbow, and the rainbow wants to be a cloud, and we don't really realize that we're not really happy of who and what we are. So she's trying to write a little children's book.
Yeah.
You know, right? So it happens, you know, in just in terms of listening, that her guidance, we're going to start working on a book. Well, we have a new book called, we have a mini course for healing relationships. It's called Love is for Everyone. The subtitle is a mini course for life. And it's a modification, an old convocation called To Give Is to Receive, an 18-day course for healing relationships.
Okay.
We just got the idea that changing the title and adding some more aspects of how, because that was done before we had attitude learning, to in a very simple fashion. I'm dyslexic, so I need to write simply and like things rather simple.
Oh, that's great.
So most of our books are simple. And so one of the books that we want to write is when Di and I first started going together, I don't know, since I got divorced back in 1973, none of my relationships worked, you know, and I said, maybe I need to be a monk or something.
Yeah.
So I wasn't thinking I could have any relationships, and started my relationship with Diane, who was 21 years younger than I. I had a heart that I had on my desk for a long time, and I said, Diane, I'm going to give you this heart, and I'm going to ask you for a favor if you can, and that is in our relationship, I'm going to ask you if you can hold my heart gently, and I'm going to do the same to you.
Mm-hmm.
I'm writing a book called Holding Each Other's Heart Gently.
Beautiful.
Because I think so oftentimes when relationships don't go well, all of a sudden there's attack, there is secrecy, there's disloyalty, and something different happens if you really keep in mind that you're not going to hurt the other individual mm-hmm. with any of your thoughts or any of your actions.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Jerry, I want to thank you so much for giving me this interview. And it's uplifting just to sit here and have this conversation with you.
Well, my pleasure. And I want to congratulate you. I think the podcast is, we haven't seen anything yet. I think it's just the very infancy stage.
That's true.
And I think it's going to be an educational tool beyond books and beyond anything we've seen. Internationally in many, many different ways. And we've just had a little experience, and it's our intention to get involved in podcasts with a new website, Love Is For Everyone. And I'll probably call on you and consult with you around
that. I would be happy to help out in any way that I can. As I mentioned in the interview itself, I found this dialogue with Jerry to be very uplifting in the moment. First of all, you can't imagine a more idyllic setting than this community of houseboats in Sausalito on the edge of the beautiful San Francisco Bay. I had my camera with me, and I now wish I had taken some snapshots to share with you in an enhanced podcast. I haven't tried that particular technology out yet. This houseboat community is special because each houseboat is an individual work of art. Each is sculpted in its own unique shape, and many are painted in fanciful color combinations. Lots of flower pots line the wharfs they are tied up to, and there are flowers and exotic plants aplenty on the various houseboat decks. And all of this in a seaside setting. It's the fortunate hobbit indeed who lives in such an environment. So the environment of the interview itself was quite wonderful and helped to set the tone. About halfway through the interview, Jerry seemed to drop down to a deeper level, and gazing into his blue eyes, I felt myself go down there with him. I could feel the intimate connection of love that he was talking about, his blue eyes reminding me of my good friend Dwight Webb in New Hampshire, who's also written a book on spirituality and who I hope to interview before long. I do hope something of this sense of inspiration that I was experiencing comes through to you, the listener. My desire is that Shrink Wrap Radio will be not only a source of information, but also a source of hope and inspiration. I know we all need regular infusions of these qualities, and I know that I have listeners who are facing tough physical and emotional challenges. I'm thinking of a recent Skype conversation with Ricky in Australia, who's been bedridden for a long time, of Julianne in London, who's dealing not only with chronic illness, but also the need to find a new place to live, and William, who for some time has been wrestling with depression, and I'm sure there are others. I hope each of you are touched in some important way by the love that Jerry reminds us to take in and to give away. An important part of his message is that we have choice at every moment. Viktor Frankl, the founder of Logotherapy, wrote an important book titled Man's Search for Meaning. I'm sure many of you will be familiar with it. It was born out of his experience as an inmate of a Nazi concentration camp during the Second World War. Even in that dire circumstance, he noted there was some wiggle room to make choices. For example, the choice to give up or the choice to hang on. And those who gave up, he reports, died. According to Frankl, those who realized they still had choices, even small choices, had a better chance of survival. One choice we all have is how we will respond to the cards fate deals us. What's the story we tell ourselves? We can tell ourselves a story of victimhood, or we can tell ourselves a story that gives meaning to our lives. This is an ongoing lesson in my own life, to remember to be conscious, to see opportunities rather than problems. Every moment a choice, every moment an opportunity.
Hey, this is Matt Van Nuys, and you're on the couch with my dad, Dr. Dave.
Thank you, my good son, Matthew. I was hoping to play a similar little transition from my son, Jonathan. I know we recorded it, but it has disappeared into the digital void. So, Jonathan, I'm afraid we're going to have to record it again. I've got four kids, and I'm hoping you'll get to hear them all. As I've mentioned before, we're a member of the Pod Show Podcast Delivery Network, and we're participating in a promotion for GoDaddy.com, which is an international company supplying domain names, domain transfers, web hosting, and related services at rock-bottom prices. If you go to our site at shrinkwrapradio.com and look in the left-hand margin, you will find a link to three different promotional codes that will entitle you to some great discounts. Plus, I'll get a little kickback, which will help to defray our server costs. Now, speaking of taking a look at the left-hand side of the shows page at shrinkwrapradio.com, you'll also see two other items there. One is a link to our Frapper map, which is spelled F-R-A-P-P-R. Please put yourself on our new Frapper map, which allows you to place a digital pushpin on the location where you live. You can get there from our site, which is over on the left at shrinkwrapradio.com/shows.htm, or by going directly to www.frapper.com/shrinkwrapradio. And once again, there's no E in Frapper. It's F-R-A-P-P-R. And now, so far, we've got 56 pins on the map. Yay! The whole point of the map is to see where you are. So please record not only your name, but where you're located. It gives me a thrill each time I discover a new pin on the map, and especially a new country. Our weblogs show that we have over 1,000 of you listening to each podcast. So start planting those pins with pride so we can see where you are. I can't read them all off, but here are some of the recent additions. A big shout out to the following folks. Greg in Apache Junction, Arizona. Frederick in Warren, Rhode Island. Pamela in Lyons, New York. Jess in Wesley Hills, Massachusetts. Juan in Gainesville, Florida. Jeffrey in Sebastopol, California. Andrew in Amsterdam, Netherlands. Daniel in Salinas, California, Patty in Penfield, New York, Carolyn in Colburg, Ontario, Canada, Blaze in Deerfield Beach, Florida, Alma in Helsinki, Finland, Blythe doesn't show a location, Corey in Rockville, Maryland, Hugh in Dublin, Ireland, Natalie Brown. Wow, Natalie Brown, we've played her music on the show. She is fantastic. Am I so lucky to have Natalie as a listener? I hope so. Dan in San Diego. Martin in Melbourne, Victoria, Australia. Andy in Godstone, England, the UK. Rosemary, Tacoma, Washington. John, Savannah, Georgia. And Gary in West Lafayette, Indiana. So as you can see, this is your chance for fame and fortune. Sign up on our Frapper map and get your name read out to the whole planet. Now, I mentioned that there are two things I want to call your attention to on the left side of our show notes page at shrinkwrapradio.com. The second one is a button that says Mobilize. A company called Voice Indigo is offering this service at no cost to you or to us. Clicking on this Mobilize button will allow you to sign up to receive the latest edition of our show on your mobile phone. Now, I believe your phone has to support text messaging for this to work. I'd be really interested to hear about your experience with this. Did it work? How well did it work? Do you want to be able to hear podcasts on your cell phone? Well, in a couple of days, I'm off to run my Hero's Journey workshop at the Chrysalis Retreat Center in County Wicklow, Ireland. Among other things, the trip is going to allow me to meet two of my Irish listeners. Listener Paul, who is a master's student in psychology there, has agreed to pick me up in Dublin and serve as my assistant in the workshop, and I'm looking forward to meeting and having dinner in Dublin with listener Hugh. This trip will mean a two-week hiatus in the Shrink Wrap radio series. I'll miss you, and I hope you'll miss me. On the other hand, the break will do me good. Putting out this show on a weekly basis takes more time and energy than you'd guess, and certainly more than I guessed. On the other hand, your feedback convinces me that it's worth the effort. If you're new to the show, this will give you a chance to go back and catch up on some of the episodes you missed. By the way, if you subscribe to our feed, you probably noticed that I put up 3 new promos this week. I hope you didn't feel spammed by my doing this. So we now have 4 different promos for the show on our website and in the feed. I'd be interested to know which one you think is most effective. Since I'm going to Ireland, here's a little clip of Irish humor. You might have heard it before. It's perfect for a show on psychology.
Hello and welcome to the Mental Health Hotline. If you are obsessive compulsive, press 1 repeatedly. If you are codependent, ask someone to press 2 for you. If you have multiple personalities, press 3, 4, 5, and 6. If you are paranoid, we know what you are and what you want. Stay on the line and we'll trace your call. If you're delusional, press 7 and your call will be transferred to the mothership. If you are schizophrenic, listen carefully and a small voice will tell you which number to press. If you are depressive, it doesn't matter which number you press, no one will answer you. If you are dyslexic, press 69696969. If you have a nervous disorder, please fidget with the hash key until the beep. After the beep, please wait for the beep. If you have a short-term memory loss, please try your call again later. And if you have low self-esteem, hang up. All our operators are too busy to talk to you.
If you happen to fall into any of the aforementioned categories, I hope you won't take offense. By the way, I'll be taking my digital recorder with me to Ireland and might try a little of what they call in podcasting a sound-seeing tour. Plus, I may come across some good subjects for Shrink Wrap Radio interviews there. Okay, now let's go to some recent mail. Corey writes, "Hello, Dr. Dave. I'm a relatively new and regular listener. I heard your promo on Escape Pod a couple of weeks ago, and I just finished your first 12 episodes. You have had some very interesting shows, but as consciousness was my favorite topic in psychology when I was a psych undergrad over 12 years ago, your 12th on altered states of consciousness has been my favorite so far. You mentioned dreams being like holograms, where the entire image can be created from the smallest part. It was evocative of a book I read in college called The Holotropic Mind by Stanislav Grof. I believe he also did some work in altered states of consciousness in the area of LSD psychotherapy. And indeed he did. I've had the opportunity to hear Dr. Stanislav Grof a couple of times myself. Going back to the note, I believe he also did some work in altered states of consciousness in the area of LSD psychotherapy. In an interesting case of synchronicity, I had recently picked up that book from my parents' house, along with several of my old psych books, because I wanted to use them in research for a speculative fiction story I'm working on. I hadn't had a chance to reread it, but I think I'm going to push it up my reading list. Hey, that sounds great, Corey. You also talked about dreams being highly metaphorical, mostly consisting of visual imagery. I think you're dead on in regards to dreams being a type of primary process thinking. I wouldn't at all be surprised if you're correct, and dogs and other animals with large olfactory brain regions might indeed smell, dream in smells. Sounds like it has potential for interesting brain scan experiments. You know, Corey, that's a great suggestion. I wish I had that expertise, but maybe we can find somebody who'd be willing to carry out that sort of experiment. They'd have to have very high-level psychophysiological skills." Corey goes on to write, "What I wonder is if the dream language developed prior to language skills, as you suggested, or along with it, as another way for the mind to understand and interact with the world. I often think that as we dream, we give our verbal center, which as Westerners we tend to be fixated in, a rest. Dreaming gives other parts of our brain and mind the steering wheel for a while." Interesting metaphor, Corey. "I wonder if during waking states, those parts of our minds are normally drowned out by the verbal center and have less control because more of an ob- objective observer. Having to take less of an active role, there would be less selective pressure for self-deception. Maybe it's part of the process that, long-term, helps us recognize our self-deceptions. I have missed the study of psychology. Thank you for giving a little of that back to me. A thank you, Corey, for that very nice letter. By the way, Corey has a blog, which you can check out at www.coreyjf.com. On the last show, I read a letter from Josh, who complained about the mixed quality of sound, that is, some sounds were loud and some were soft on the previous episode, the one with the Drs. Ironson. And he's written back again. He says, "Dr. Dave, I must state I was quite thrilled to hear a spectacular difference when I listened to episode 34 yesterday. The sound was the best I believe I've heard. Also, I'm quite glad you have opted to allow the show to run to whatever length it needs to be to address the given issue. Your issues have enough interesting points that an hour-length episode seems to go by in 30 minutes. Anyway, keep up the good work. Also, if you're looking for ways to grow your listenership, you might want to try cross-advertising with other podcasts. Some of the ones I enjoy listening to are Mysterious Universe and Beyond Science. They can sometimes be out there, but they do have some interesting points on some episodes. Anyway, have a good day." Hey, thanks for those suggestions, Josh, and I do try to do as much cross-promotion with other podcasts as I can. As a matter of fact, I will be having a promo from a related podcast towards the end of this show. Dean and I exchanged several emails about difficulty he was having being able to listen to the show on his MP3 player, which is not one that I'm familiar with. It's called the Xcent XT100. Well, after several emails back and forth, he figured out that the difficulty was the pound sign that's in the name of my show. It's actually the number, like number 35, and there's a pound sign to indicate number. That was throwing off his MP3 player, and I pass along this learning from Dean in case anyone else runs into a similar problem. I got a nice note from Julianne in London again, one that she's titled Part 1, which means there's probably going to be a Part 2. And she writes, "I'm so sorry I haven't gotten back to you sooner. Typing has been very painful and my voice is still rough. Plus my health overall is well at the point where I just want to give up and hibernate until everything is all over. I've been jotting down notes of things I want to write you about, but I know I won't be able to get to it. All my hands hurt." I'm sorry, I misread that. "I won't be able to get to it all. My hands already hurt with just this. So consider this Part 1. The question I've been trying to ask my dreams for guidance on was, what can I do to find a suitable new home for us? I don't think I've gotten any meaningful help from my subconscious. We have to be out of our current apartment in about 6 weeks, but still don't have a new place lined up as wheelchair accessible property is extremely hard to come by. My stress levels are through the roof, which pretty much has knocked me out of commission entirely." Now, Julianne is in London. If there's a listener in London that might be able to help with her housing, I'm going to give you her blog address and you could get in touch with her. Some podcasts that you might find interesting and or find potential guests from them are Intuitive Health. This is from HayHouseRadio.com. They make you register to listen as it is a password-protected feed, but they have a lot of interesting shows. Intuitive Health seems like one you'd be particularly interested in, as it looks at intuition in almost every aspect of life and its impact, both good and bad. She also mentions Dead Serious, an Australian podcast that deals with a variety of topics relating to health, relating to life, death, healing, leadership, rites of passage, and more. And she gives that URL as http://deadserious.thepodcastnetwork.com. And she mentions that's their blog site. She says, "I think you would like episodes 30 and 31 about funeral rituals, and 32, which mirrors your own show in that it is an interview with a shamanic healer who also deals with creating ceremony for life transitions and many more topics. NPR on books via npr.org okay, there's nothing in particular here other than that it is utterly fascinating the range of people and topics covered. Since we don't get NPR broadcasts over here, I rely on their podcasts, and this show in particular, a weekly compilation of all their segments related to books, never fails to inspire me somehow. I have to stop typing now, but I will try to write more a little at a time as I can. I have quite a few things jotted down, so there may be many messages. If you ever think that I'm just not responding for no reason, my blog, and here's her blog address, julianne.livejournal.com. That's julianne.livejournal.com. And I give it out because I assume that as a blogger, she wants to be read. Continuing her sentence, my blog generally tracks whether I'm dealing with email at all or just not up to any of it. Whatever the cause, it's never anything personal. Best wishes and keep up the wonderful shows. Julianne, thank you so much, and I always look forward to hearing from you. Next comes an email that I was really tickled by. It comes from Joan, and she says, I'm not a psychiatrist, psychologist, psychotherapist, or patient client thereof, nor am I an undergraduate, graduate, or postgraduate student of psychology. Nevertheless, I am finding your podcast an excellent alternative to the vapid, screeching world of talk radio, especially as the weather gets better. I live in the damp Northwest, and I can take you on long walks. Keep up the good work. Hey, thanks so much for that, because it's really important to me to have listeners who are not psychiatrists, psychologists, psychotherapists, or patients, clients thereof, or undergraduates, graduates, or postgraduate students of psychology. I want to reach everybody, so thanks a lot for that. Finally, William and I have had some email exchanges back and forth, and his most recent says, Dr. Dave, thanks for the input. I've explored some of the topics you wrote about in your message. It's nice to know I was moving in the right direction. Depression and I are old companions. After my injuries, it's been all invention and working on creative reflection, given the mileage I put on my body during my working life. I'm happy to explore the inner world for a while, but I like to make sure my maps and guides are accurate from time to time. Once again, thank you for the program and your time. And welcome, and William, you're very welcome. Okay, as you can see, your listener email and feedback is the fuel this show runs on. You can send your email to shrink@shrinkwrapradio.com. My username on Skype is ShrinkPod. I've even got a page on MySpace, and I'm still figuring out what to do with that. The name there is also ShrinkPod. And we have a call-in number where you can leave voicemail, and that number is 206-888-2746. Even when I'm in Ireland, you can send me email because I'll have my trusty BlackBerry with me. But on that tiny keyboard, my reply will likely be on the short side of terse. By the way, if you do send me an email that you don't want me to read on the air, be sure to let me know that in the email itself. Please help spread the word about Shrink Wrap Radio to your friends and colleagues. If you have a podcast or a blog, we'd certainly appreciate a plug there. You might want to check out Daryl Kulak's podcast called Holistic Health Nation, which you can find at holistichealthnation.com. I heard him interviewed on another podcast and realized we have some overlapping interests. I listened to two episodes on Qigong. Having studied Tai Chi, that was of particular interest to me. In a later show, I'll play the promo for Holistic Health Nation. As usual, we close today's show with a piece of PodSafe music. I generally avoid songs about romance since those are quite abundant everywhere. I look for songs that touch on psychological themes, especially when I can find one that matches the interview of the day. However, today, I just have to make an exception. I heard this song, Code Monkey, by Jonathan Colton on Adam Curry's DSC while driving my car. It's hard to say why, but it really tickled me, and I just found it totally original. I've never been a professional programmer, but I have taken and even taught some university-level computer programming courses, just enough for me to identify with the code monkey. I couldn't find it on the PodSafe Music Network, so I went to Jonathan Colton's website at jonathancolton.com. That's JonathanColton.com. And I paid $1 for it. That's how badly I wanted to share it with you. I left a note for Jonathan on his website, and I got the following reply. Hey, David. Great. Thanks for the airplay. Glad to hear it touched a nerve. Don't know exactly what psychological themes you look for, but most of the characters in my songs are crazy in one way or another. The song My Monkey is a guy resolving an argument with his wife by transferring his thoughts and feelings to their monkey butler, whose name is Brian Dennehy. Wait, maybe I'm the one who's crazy. Anyway, thanks for the airplay and enjoy the music. So thanks for that note back, Jonathan. Maybe it's that I once owned a monkey, and I have a special place in my heart for monkeys. I don't know. But anyway, go ahead and buy some music from Jonathan's website. This very creative artist needs our support. Well, that's it for now. This is Dr. Dave saying, it's all in your mind.
Code monkey, get up, get coffee. Code monkey, go to job. Code monkey, have boring meeting with boring manager Rob. Rob say code monkey, very diligent, but his output stink. His code not functional or elegant. What do code monkey think? Code monkey think maybe manager wanna write goddamn login page himself. Code monkey not say it out loud. Code monkey not crazy, just proud. Code monkey like Fritos. Code monkey like Tab and Mountain Dew. Code monkey very simple man with big warm fuzzy secret heart. Code monkey like you. Code monkey like you. Code monkey hang around at front desk till your sweater look nice. Code monkey offer buy you soda, bring you cup, bring you ice. You say no thank you for the soda, cause soda make you fat. Anyway, you busy with the telephone, no time for chat. Code monkey have long walk back to cubicle. He sit down, pretend to work. Code monkey not thinking so straight. Code monkey not feeling so great. Code monkey like Fritos. Code monkey like Tab and Mountain Dew. Code monkey very simple man, big warm fuzzy secret heart. Code monkey like you. Code monkey like you. Coffee cake, take bath, take nap. This job fulfilling in creative way, such a load of crap. Code monkey thinks someday he have everything, even pretty girl like you. Code monkey just waiting for now. Code monkey says someday, somehow. Code monkey like Fritos. Code monkey like Tab and Mountain Dew. Code monkey very simple man, big warm fuzzy secret heart. Code monkey like you. Code monkey like you.